Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
I couldn't be better, Scott. We are coming off a 62-47 win in the Crosstown Shootout. One that, you know, UC won rather comfortably from about probably the first or second to last media timeout in the first half. Really turned on the Jets in the second half, 162-47. Xavier really didn't have any answers for UC's defense, which is really unlike a lot of the recent Crosstown Shootouts we've seen. Overall, good vibes. It was nice to, you know, put a six, you know, get up, 16 wins in the series. I think the series now 51-35, Cincinnati. Just an overall, you know, really, really good game against a very, very good marquee opponent to add another win on the resume. What are your thoughts on this game, Scott?
Yeah, obviously, first thing that just jumps off the screen was like how great the defense was in that game. They didn't give Xavier pretty much any solid looks the entire game. And the intensity from the fans and like the players was just like off the charts from the get-go. Like a really solid effort in a game that was, like, as you mentioned, kind of like unlike some of the other shootouts, and that the pace was really, really slow, under 60 possessions.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bearcats, like, were still able to get their offense going. Like, they got Xavier to play their tempo, like, play their up and down type of game. And fortunately for the Bearcats, they were just, like, way too much, way too physical. And they made some big shots, like Jaron Cumberland hit big shots, like it seemed. Every time Xavier thought about getting back in the game, he would hit a big one. And Trace Scott continued his great play, like another double-double, 10-10. Like a hidden star that we talked about. And Keith Williams as well. Like one of the big keys we talked about in the preview was that second guy really going off, and it was Keith Williams, 16 points.
Yeah, and I think the biggest key that you just mentioned was forcing Xavier to play Cincinnati's game. Like you mentioned, it was a slow pace of play, but I think I counted at least two or three times when Xavier had a shot clock violation because he just could not find an open look offensively. And how many times have we been watching this Crosstown Shootout in recent years where Xavier just goes on these torrid runs where they're shooting three after three after three and UC just can't keep up? Like UC held Xavier to 20% from three, which is just so that's a typical stat you see from any opponent that plays UC. But in recent years, Xavier regularly shoots like 50 or 60% from three, which is like an outsider looking at that stat. You're just mind boggled with how that happens. And on Saturday, They couldn't find any open looks. The commentators even mentioned it seemed like Xavier was playing 5-on-7 with how well UC was rotating. And, you know, for as much as we kind of get on Mick for focusing so much on the defense and practices and making his program about the defense, that performance on Saturday is why he's doing it. Is the ability for UC to shut down a prolific team like Xavier. In any given possession, Xavier just could not. I mean, they were struggling shots left and right. I mean, they would get the occasional three, which, I mean, they're gonna, but they couldn't get inside. They couldn't find open looks. There was constantly a guy in their face. And yeah, to your point, it was UC's controlled ball game, and that was really, really refreshing to see.
Yeah, like, especially. Like to focus on the defense, it seemed like every time Xavier would rotate the ball, instead of getting like the looks they wanted, like along the baseline or the corner, it's like they would just be swarmed.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't be able to rotate the ball back across the zone. Like it was just like completely smothering, especially at the start of the second half, where they just completely threw Xavier like off guard. And the Musketeers, we had no answers until the game was out of hand. I mean, the first half, Xavier shoots 28%. Second half, they shoot 42%, but there was some garbage time at the end of this game, of course. Cincinnati was up by 20 points, 5 minutes left. And like the 3-point shooting, something you mentioned. Like, even when Cincinnati won a couple years ago, Xavier hit like 15 threes. And Xavier was 5 of 25. I mean, it was just completely flipping the script from the shootouts. Just a great, really great effort. And the guys that they had to shut down, like Najee Marshall, 2 of 13. Gooden was 5 of 12, 1 of 7 from 3. Even though he had a pretty solid statistical game, I would say, with 12 and 5 assists. But then that turnovers were one of the other like huge factors. 12 Xavier turnovers, only 8 assists, and 5 of them were by Gooden. It's like they just got the ball out of his hands when they could, and none of the other guys made any type of plays. And the Bearcats scored 17 points off of turnovers in the game. They won by 15 points.
Yeah, and like the big piece of the game was preventing a good Xavier team from getting extra possessions, and they definitely did that. I think they won the defensive rebounding battle. I think they only allowed something like 7 offensive rebounds for Xavier, something like that. Xavier had 7 offensive rebounds out of a total of 30. They forced turnovers. They got 12 of them, to your point, turning them into direct points. It was just a smothering, dynamic defense that we see almost every game of the year except for this one, and that was what was so exciting about this win. And looking broadly, I mean, if you're able to hold Xavier to 20 points, you know, to 47 points, which is that's the first time they've been held to under 50 in like 5 years. I mean, it bodes well for this team's prospects going forward. And, you know, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, getting 16 points out of Keith Williams and points that, you know, he really out-muscled for those points. You know, you don't really typically see a UC guard going down low and dunking 3 or 4 times in the game. And Keith Williams just muscles his way inside, and Xavier's bigs had no answer for him. You mentioned Trey Scott. He had a double-double. He was able to get up on the glass and get rebounds. He's able to turn those rebounds into points. He was able to step out and get a little bit of a jumper going. Cumberland had 19. Hell, Justin Jennifer nearly had a double-double with his 9 assists and 7 points. Like, 9 damn assists out of your point guard. I mean, you take that every day of the week. It was just an overall good performance on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, definitely. But Jennifer deserves some mention. Like, he really played extraordinarily well. Like his
best game of his last 2 years, I would say, right there.
Oh yeah, I would say so too. Because like one of the knocks on him has been like when the stage is brightest, he hasn't really stepped up a ton, and he stepped up a whole lot. Like obviously assists like are end up with guys making shots, and he got the ball like right to everybody in the pocket. Like he was able to find Keith Williams like whenever he was around the basket, which was a lot. Like 7 to 12 on 2-point shots for Keith Williams. Like just really had a monster game. Like it seemed like Xavier had no idea what to do with him. And then like the rebounding, as you mentioned, 12 offensive rebounds for the Bearcats, and Sosa played what, like 15 or 16 minutes, and he had 4 mm-hmm. offensive boards. Like Brooks had a couple offensive boards, so did Trey Scott. And Bearcats just really hammered the glass, and they did a lot to throw Xavier off. Xavier just wasn't ready for how physical the Bearcats were on really either side of the ball, and the Bearcats were able to not turn the ball over. Like, Broome had 2 turnovers, and that was the team high. Only 5 turnovers as a team to 16 assists.
Yeah, no, you're going to take those stats every day of the week. And, I mean, looking at the other side of the ball, too, I mean, they shot 40% from the field, almost, you know, 28% from 3, which is, you know, a little less than probably you'd like. But, I mean, how many of these games did UC go completely dead on both sides of the ball? And it was really, this was like one of their most complete crosstown shootouts of the Mick Cronin era, which, you know, bodes well for, you know, series going forward and just the season going forward as well. I mean, I would have probably, if we're going to be nitpicking, you know, I kind of would have liked a little more out of, like, Kane Broome, who only had 3 points. But, you know, you can maybe chalk it up to an off night. To your point, Sosa May contributed quite a bit. Justin Jennifer had a good game. Keith Williams had a monster game, so you didn't really need as much out of Broome, but it seemed like Broome really struggled in that game, which is a little concerning, going forward, if Keith Williams or Justin Jennifer have bad nights. But, then again, if they have bad nights, Cumberland can still get his points, and you have a good weapon in Trey Scott down low, so maybe it'll all work out. But if we're looking at this team as a whole, it really are starting to come together at the right time. And we'll talk about this in a little bit as we preview Mississippi State. But, if they won three in a row against pretty solid KenPom, RPI, BPI, whatever you want to call them, teams, you've got Mississippi State on Saturday and UCLA next Wednesday. If you can win one of those next two, which, it's trending like they probably will win at least one of those next two, you are set from a resume standpoint heading into AAC play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Mississippi State game, I know we'll really get in-depth in that in a few minutes. It's almost like a free roll because that's a top 25 level team. And you go on the road to play that. It's like winning would be great, but it's not like a loss there would really kill you. And UCLA at home, this team should win most of their home games. I know they have a lot of talent. But the excitement is in the air. After a performance like that, this team, we know it has the pieces to, at least in the one-game scenario, really lock anybody down. But as you mentioned, the bench, the scoring is, a major concern off the bench. Broome's 3 points, Trevor Moore hit his only shot. That's all you get off the bench is 6 points. They rely so much on their starters to do well and carry the load. Second, that's really unlike what we saw last year, because there's not a ton of depth on this team, especially inside where Fredericks doesn't really play. And it's really all on Sosume to be the big off the bench. And he responded really well against Singer. But his big knock on him is he's not really an offensive threat, and he didn't score in this game. One of the other things, I know UC had 16 assists, but they came from three guys. So you'd like to see some of the other guys be more involved passing-wise. But hockey assists are pretty good. It seemed like UC was able to swing the ball around quite a bit. Because your bigs didn't really turn the ball over. Trey Scott, no turnovers. UC or Brooks, no turnovers. It's pretty solid when those are really two of the guys you worry about turning the ball over a lot.
Yeah, I feel like with this team, it's I'm less concerned about the bench as long as the starters are putting up the kind of points they did on Saturday. Heading into the season, you probably expected Broome to finish behind Cumberland in points per game. Right now, it seems like Keith Williams is going to be that guy. You just kind of flip-flop them in terms of, Keith was supposed to come off the bench and Broome was supposed to start, and now it's the opposite. I feel like if this is kind of just like the nature of, losing three seniors to graduation, you got to kind of condense your bench. You're not going to get as many contributors, especially when, a guy like Sosume is really seeing significant minutes for the first time. I think he only averaged two or three points or minutes per game last year. The biggest concern for me is instead of just the bench, just zeroing in right on Kane Broome. Moore is less of a factor to me. He only played 7 minutes. He's not going to play that many more minutes if he still plays like that. Fredericks and Johnson, I was hoping Fredericks was going to come in and make an impact, but it sounds like the game's still kind of catching up to him. Sosume is just kind of a filler. He's not really an offensive threat anyways. So it's got to come from Broome. I just don't know how you get him going. Run him out there against, whoever. I can't remember who they play. Is Savannah State after UCLA? Just run him out there for 30 minutes or something and just see if he can finally find his shot again or something.
Because the three-point shooting you mentioned a bit earlier, that's the biggest flaw on this team. They just don't really have any outside threats outside of Jerron Cumberland. And Cumberland's done a really great job in carrying the load. But then, like, it goes down to Justin Jennifer, who is, like, shot pretty well this season. He's, like, 46%.
Okay, yeah, he's okay.
And then, like, a massive fall off to Keith Williams, yeah, who's, like, 28%. Like, that's really what you worry about, because if, like, you are one-dimensional, that's not really good offense. That's your basketball 101 lesson of the game.
Well, it totally makes sense because, I mean, we were going to talk about Mississippi State. Their biggest strength on the team are their bigs. Like, who knows if Keith Williams is going to be able to get inside and shoot 7 of 11 from 2 and get a few dunks against Mississippi State. I don't know. They're going to have to find some weapons from the outside. You know, right now, to your point, it's Cumberland and nobody else, really. So, yeah, I mean, it is a valid concern.
Because the lack of guys who can create their own shot, like, really stands out. Like, you have Keith Williams and Cumberland. And, like, Jennifer, he, like, penetrates some, but he's really a spot-up shooter. And, like, your bigs can't really get their own shot. And Broom can, but, he hasn't shot very well. And that's it. Especially off the bench, like, where it's so cement, yeah, can't really do much. You're, like, more... just stands on the perimeter.
Yeah, he's more. What I love about Trevor Moore is that no matter how he's playing, no matter how the team's going, he is like the biggest amp up guy on this roster. Like, I thought it might have been like Mamadou Diarra, but every time UC does something, he's like jumping up and down and cheering on the bench. And UC can be up by 20 or down by 20. He's a nice motivator off the bench. But yeah, he's not really giving you much else other than that. And unfortunately, you know, it has to be Broom. And he's a senior. He's been in this program this is his third year in the program. He should be reliable enough to hit two or three threes a game. Like, I don't know what's going on with him.
Yeah, there's something just wrong in his shot. Like, he's way too good a shooter to be 5 of 26 from 3.
Right.
And it's not like he's had the contested looks every single time. He's had some open looks. He just hasn't knocked them down. Like, he and Jennifer combined 1 of 8 from 3. Like, that's something to watch, because you can't have no three-point shooting from your point guard position. And unfortunately, that's been, like, the problem almost the entire season.
Yeah.
Outside of when Jennifer had a couple in some of these games. But as you mentioned, like, you have Jerron Cumberland to step up and fill, like, any type of void. He's really just taken over when this team needs it. So it's, like, one of the big things we worried about coming into the season is if he could take all these targets, and he's done a great job in doing so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I guess, you know, the on the flip side of that, you know, if Jennifer and Broom aren't hitting threes, at least you have guys like Keith Williams and Trey Scott to balance out Cumberland. Because, you know, if you're trading a 3 for a 2, you know, obviously you're scoring less points. There's your basketball 102. But at least those are more higher percentage shots. And Trey Scott and Keith Williams have shown a knack the last couple of weeks to really get them consistently. So, you know, maybe it's a wash in the end, but you're right. Eventually they're going to run into a team like this Saturday that's going to collapse down low and not give up shots within the three-point line as easily as they've seen over the last few weeks.
Because, like, a lot of the success has been, like, Nysir Brooks is shooting 61%. Trey Scott's shooting 54%. While scoring 11 points a game. Like, that's really been where UC's been thriving, and Keith Williams is shooting 49% on the season.
Right.
Like, those guys being efficient and having, like, nice scoring outings, being able to pick up the offense. So, like, it'd be, like, it just, like, kind of turned to Mississippi State against a team like that who has, like, a bunch of big guys and is going to play you, like, straight up man-to-man. It'll be interesting to see if, like, some of these guys can get free and have, like, the same impact they've had against some of these other teams that don't really have the height and the like bulk to stop them. Like Xavier definitely did not have any type of bruisers inside, which like we knew going into the game. But it was like such a stark contrast between Cincinnati's post-game and Xavier's post-game. That like Mississippi State offers a really big challenge.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we talk about Cincinnati's, like, you know, style of play going with the 3-2. I mean, Mississippi State does that, and then, I mean, I think I watched one game earlier this year where I think they had three of their forwards out there at one time. I could be wrong. I don't really quite remember, but maybe it was just because they just seemed so long and lengthy in general that, you know, maybe had one of their guards, like, playing the three or the two or something like that. Anyways, this is like UC's biggest challenge down low this season. I mean, we talked a little, I mean, Ohio State had a couple of good bigs, but Mississippi State leans on and relies on their bigs. Like they're 34th in the country in defensive points per game. They're averaging 4.3 blocks per game. Eric Coleman has 2.1 of those blocks per game. I mean, they're going to be a challenge down low, like something UC has not faced this season.
Yeah, and they have explosive guards to help, like, bolster that, too. Like, Witherspoon's averaging 17 points a game. Like, Lamar Peters is averaging 14 points a game, while being a pretty efficient three-point shooter. Like, and as you mentioned, like, they have a bunch of guys who are really big. Like, and they just, like, rotate those guys through. A lot of, like, 6'10", 6'8", 6'9", guys, like, they just throw in their own whole entire front line. And for, like, the Bearcats aren't really, like, blessed with guys, like, that big. Like, you're playing Trey Scott, who's, like, 6'7", 6'8". Like, Brooks is under 7 feet tall. Like, so that could be, like, their toughest, like, physical challenge so far this season. Like, besides Ohio State, who had the brothers who really gave UC fits. That's going to be something that don't really have to worry about in league play, the Bearcats. Not a lot of these teams have, like, bruising bigs. But a team like Mississippi State, like, in a place that's really, like, tough to play, the Humphrey Coliseum, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this game last year that UC won 65-50. I mean, Mississippi State beat them in terms of rebounds. They had 38 rebounds at Cincinnati's 37. They killed the offensive glass, 17 offensive boards. They didn't. I mean, they turned the ball over 16 times, which is probably the biggest factor in this game. But Eric Coleman still had a double double with 10 and 18. The Witherspoon twins had 12 points each. Like, they're playing the exact same team they had last year. That gave them pretty good fits at home. I mean, it was only Jacob Evans, you know, pretty monstrous performance that really lifted this team. But I mean, that was, you're facing the same team you did last year in a hostile environment. To your point, in an arena that doesn't really treat opponents very well, and you're doing it while replacing Kyle Washington and Gary Clark down low, who had 18 rebounds between the two of them last year. So it's going to be a big challenge. UC is not favored in this game. ESPN's matchup predictor has a 64% chance of winning for Mississippi State. It's unfortunately, it's going to come down to the guards, right? Like, it's going to come down to, like, Cumberland and whoever else can shoot threes from the outside, right, Scott?
Yeah, absolutely, because, like, you know, Mississippi State is going to do that on their end. Like, they hit 36% from three, like a solid three-point shooting team. Like, they don't get to the line. Like, if you can keep them from hitting shots, you can, they won't score points. That's basketball 103. We're, like, giving you guys all
that. Yeah, we should be charging for this kind of analytics.
But, like, you have to keep them off the three-point line. But as you mentioned, like, they really hit the glass. Like, Hallman has had a really good season. They're 21st in offensive rebound percentage. It's like something we talked about some going into the Xavier game. Like, Cincinnati did a really good job of keeping Xavier off the offensive glass. It's like, you have to do that against Mississippi State as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, It's one of those games where I feel like I'm down to... I don't feel like it. It's definitely going to come down to like the last media timeout. Like I don't see a situation where Mississippi State gets up by more than a couple of possessions, and Cincinnati does vice versa. Like I feel like this is going to be a game that in somewhere like the 60s, like at best, like this could be like one of UC's like first like 50 to 52 games in years.
Yeah, that's one of the. One of the things that looks like it has the makings for is being that type of game. Like, this is the most balanced team UC's played so far. Like, they're even more balanced than Ohio State was, like, on the offensive and defensive ends. Like, running, like, both top 25 offense and defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we saw against Ohio State, who had a nicely ranked KenPom offense. But the Bearcats did a pretty good job of slowing them down for the most part.
Yeah.
But, the big key for, road games like this is, guys play better at home. And if, they hit a couple threes and that place gets rocking, that just, put your backs up against the wall. And you don't want, to rush into your offense on the other end, which is not really a problem UC has too much.
And when they walk up the floor for 15 seconds, yeah.
The biggest key, I think, is Mississippi State on offense. Because I think the Bearcats will find a way to get theirs. Like, Mississippi State, shoots a lot more threes, and they move the ball a lot more than a lot of these other teams had. It's so, that's going to be something they have to shut down. You can't get beat on the second pass and, leave guys open, because this is a team that will take advantage of it. Their three-point shooting has been, pretty good. They have some guys who... some guys don't have a ton of attempts. They have, three guys over 50% who take attempted at least 20. It's they're going to put up the three ball.
Yeah, absolutely. It's... Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything else to add to that game, to add to that analysis. I mean, I think it's... If Trey Scott has a double-double in this game, UC should be in pretty good shape. If he doesn't have a double-double and Jerron Cumberland is the only guy scoring points, then UC's going to have a big issue on Saturday. I mean, how do you think this one eventually, winds up?
I think this is going to be a really tough game to go win. I kind of think Mississippi State is going to pull this one out. Just because we haven't seen it from the Bearcats on the road yet. Not that they have to win on the road first for them to win this type of game. Against, a seasoned team, that's pretty good. This is really, a free-roll game. You don't have to win. But if, you do win, that's, a huge boost. A nice feather in your cap.
Right.
But I'm really interested to see, how the Bigs respond in this one. Because you mentioned, you can't really have Trey Scott or Brooks get in foul trouble. Brooks fouled out of the Ohio State game. You have to keep those guys on the floor, because it seems just between, them and, Sosabe and, Fredericks, even though we haven't seen a ton of Fredericks this year, it's, a real big drop-off in just how they play overall. So having one or both of those guys in foul trouble, it's a huge strike against you. I think this is going to go down to the wire. I think your prediction of this going to the last NBA timeout is pretty apt. So I can't see either team really pulling away too much in this one. I think whoever hits 60 first is going to win.
Yeah, I honestly think this is going to be a 58. I'm going to pick it, because they are on such a hot streak. They've proven that they're really starting to come into their own this season. This is, the single biggest test of their season thus far. But, I mean, just because I have fandom bias, I'm going to pick, a 58-56 UC win.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I would say 62-58 of Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Because you could, make the argument. Mississippi State hasn't really played anybody too impressive. They did just, throttle Clemson over the weekend on a neutral site. And their only loss was to Arizona State, also on a neutral site, one of those Thanksgiving week tournaments. It's not like this is a team that hasn't played anybody, say, like, on Cincinnati's level. Like, while Mississippi State has been impressive, they haven't really shown a ton. But I guess on the other end, you could say really say that about the Bearcats, because,
yeah,
like, who's the best team that they've beaten this season? Was it Xavier Miss? Like, neither one of those teams has been really anything to
probably,
write them about.
Yeah. It's probably Xavier than, like, NKU, I'm sure. Or maybe flip those two. Maybe? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, because, like, Mississippi State, they played, like, probably their big three biggest teams are probably Clemson, Dayton, and Arizona State, right? Like, pretty comparable to UC's, like, top three teams of, like, Ohio State, Xavier, and, you know, NKU slash Ole Miss, right?
NKU is, but, like, lost to Eastern Kentucky, so I would not
say, oh, dear God, what?
Best three wins. But I think when the like a true road game, UC has only played one true road game so far at UNLV, and they didn't play extremely well during that game. Like, this is a much tougher test than UNLV.
That's true. It is by far their biggest test of the season. I mean, if this was at home, I would still say Ohio State was a bigger test, but just from where we're at in the season, what we're building to, what the bigs have shown, and what some of the players have not shown this season, I mean, it's definitely the biggest test. I mean, I kind of agree. Like, this isn't like a make or break game of the season. Like, UC's already building a solid resume so far. I mean, NKU, even though they lost to Eastern Kentucky, to your point, I mean, they're still 8-3. I think they're still pretty well favored to win the Horizon. They a Xavier team that might eke out an at-large big bit out of the Big East if they put things together. They're still KenPom, I think, 59th or something like that rated team. There's a lot of opportunities in AAC play, and they still have UCLA next Wednesday. Yeah, I mean, if they go in there and they beat Mississippi State, great. You're in the NCAA tournament pretty much if you beat Mississippi State on the road. If you don't, then it's not the end of the world. It's more about like how they play, I feel like, than what the outcome of the game is at this point.
Exactly. That's how I feel about this one. Like, you have a Mississippi State team that has four guys averaging double digits. Like you mentioned, like they rebound well. They hit like a lot of threes. They have a big shot blocker, which is, I think, like a low-key interesting thing. They have two guys averaging at least one block, and Holman's averaging two. Like, and we haven't seen UC against a shot blocker this year. And obviously they have a gigantic one, like, once they conference play, even though they don't play UCF until, like, the end of February. Like, it'll be interesting to see, like, how UC responds to a team that's going to try to funnel things inside, like, towards their big. And if like, Scott and Brooks can do what they've been doing, like, Brooks more rebounding, but if, like, Scott can get going offensively, it's going to be like a real interesting test. And I think he could definitely pass, but going on the road to such a tough team, like, who is ranked in like the AP poll, number 18? Like, if you win, it would be a great win. If you lose, I don't think it's like a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. If you lose at Mississippi State and lose again to UCLA, then UC has to do a little more work to do. Which, I mean, what's odd about this conference this year is that if you look at all their KenPom ratings, like, the bottom half of the conference is actually a little better this year than it was last year. Like, Tulsa just beat Kansas State, which is oddly probably the biggest the biggest game win in the conference thus far this season. But there's like five teams that are like between 100 and 200 in KenPom. I mean, UC will probably win 9 out of those 10 games. Assume I can't remember exactly if they're playing, you know, 9 games against those 5 teams or 10 games, but they should stack their resume with a good amount of, you know, 100 to 200 wins as we head into like the Selection Sunday in a few months. But I feel like if it's one of the situations on Saturday against Mississippi State where Trey Scott completely collapses under the pressure, Keith Williams can't get inside, you know, Jerron Cumberland might shoot well from three, but Broome is still struggling, and you know, Justin Jennifer does get his points, and maybe he starts trying to drop Eric Holman and get stuffed for whatever goddamn reason, and Nicaea Brooks fouls out. Like, if it's one of those situations where they completely, they don't just get, like, a C on the test, they completely flunk it, then I'd be really concerned going forward. But I honestly don't really see that happening in this game. I think at worst, kind of a poor performance out of UC is something where they lose, like, you know, 60 to 50, and Jerron Cumberland goes, like, 1 of 7 from three or something like that.
Like, the worst-case scenario is, just, like, harkens back to the Ohio State game. Like, guys, nobody else scores. It's just Cumberland, like, taking a bunch of shots. And if, like, he's, like, inefficient in his shots, then you're kind of, like, screwed. And if nobody else steps up, you're really definitely screwed. Like, Keith Williams has been really, like, really interesting to watch, the way he's really broken out. Like, if he can keep his breakout going, like, I think they'll be in really good shape. Like, he's played really, really well the last 4 or 5 games. But if, like, Mississippi State keeps him from, like, dunking on people, like, how will he try to get his points? Like, if they keep him off the line, which, like, nobody's really done lately, like, that would be a huge, like, almost, not to say disaster, like, a huge, like, boon against the UC offense. Like, this is really the type of game where, like, if UC hits, I don't know, like, where did they shoot against Xavier from three? Like, not really that great, like,
20%. Yeah, 28%. They did okay.
If they pull that off again, like, that you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, because to your point, I mean, everything I've loved about Keith Williams this year has been within the three-point line. Like, I think you rattled off the stat earlier where he's not shooting that well from three. And if he has to change his game to shoot three, he's shooting 27% from three. It's right in front of me. That's great. If he has to rely on his three ball to get points in this game, like, UC is not going to win this game. Like, if you're relying on somebody besides Cumberland to shoot threes, and the combination of, like, I don't know, Williams, Broom, and Jennifer are going, like, 1 of 10 from three, like, this is an automatic loss. Like, you've got something from behind the three-point line because, I mean, let's be honest. Like, Trey Scott is going to have his biggest challenge down low this season, and we don't really know if he's going to rise to the occasion. And Nicaea Brooks, while he's a good complement to Scott, he's not a guy who's going to be able to get points if Scott isn't able to do so. So, I mean, the biggest factors are Cumberland and Scott. But if one of those two guys aren't going to be able to put up their points, I mean, it's got to come from somewhere. And my money is it has to come from someone who can shoot threes.
Yeah, and like on the Scott and like Brooks scenario, one of the things that we saw against Ohio State was like their bigs, like the Weston brothers, like took UC's bigs outside, and like that's something Mississippi State's going to do as well. Like Holman just attempted 34 three-pointers. Like you have to get on him, like, at the perimeter, which, like, really hurts UC's defensive rebounding if you have your big guys away from the basket. So that's going to be a lot of little different things to watch in this game. Should be a really, really interesting contest.
Yeah, exactly. And I still say UC can I feel like they've been building momentum over the last to kind of build into this game. And I don't know if that really matters, especially when you're going on the road against such a difficult opponent that really matches up against you pretty well. But I don't know. Fan of bias tells me they're going to win like 55-58-56 and you'll be walking out of here happy. But I mean, if they don't, it's like we said, it's not the end of the world. Do you have any other thoughts on this game?
No, I think we covered most of Mike and my major thoughts on this game. It's going to be really fun to see UC go on the road, a night game. I don't really know how much that matters in basketball. But like a night primetime game against a top 25 team on the road. A nice test after UC's like been pretty dominant throughout the non-conference schedule after the Ohio State game. Like the one blip being on the road at UNLV, and now they go on the road to Mississippi State. Like, another tricky place to play. I'm really anxious to see how this team responds. So they've done nothing but respond this season.
Yeah, exactly. So, It should be a really good game. It's going to be the most frustrating game of the season, I'm sure. Like, it's going to be every 2 points are going to be scratching and clawing for it. And unfortunately, that's just the type of matchup it is.
I don't think you can say any game is going to be the most frustrating game of the season when they play Central Florida twice.
I mean, we
have those 40-point games waiting for us at the end of the year.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Good point. So, yeah, do you want to, like, pop over to the conference? Or do you have any other thoughts on this game?
No, we can look at the league as a whole really quick. Houston had another good win against Oklahoma State. They're 8-0. They seem like the next big challenger besides the Bearcats, obviously, since they're undefeated. They're playing really, really well. They've surprised me, Houston. Have you had a chance to check them out yet?
I have not, because I barely watch. I barely have time to watch. UC basketball as it is, let alone Houston. But I mean, maybe I should. I mean, to your point, I mean, yeah, they've beaten a ranked Oregon team. They beat Oklahoma State last week. They've beaten. They've beaten everyone on their schedule. They're 8-0. They're ranked. They really haven't. They haven't really succumbed to the loss of Rob Gray, which I thought they would. I thought they were going to fall back in a big way, but I mean, they just keep right on plowing ahead as a solid program. And they're among the teams with UC and UCF who are currently projected to make the field next March, which is a good sign. I mean, they had a lot of turnover last season, just like UC did, and they're both projected to go into the tournament again. So, it's good to see out of the Cougars.
And they've done that, like, with their defense. Their defense, 30th on KenPom. Their opponent effective field goal percentage is 43.7. Like, wow. Like, they don't let anybody get to the foul line. And their opponents are somehow shooting 59% on free throws, which is really bad. I don't know if anybody knew that. That's pretty bad. Like, they were a real surprise. And like you mentioned, Tulsa. They've had a couple of rough losses in there, but they beat Kansas State in a pretty ugly game. Which, did you see go to Tulsa? I hope not, because that game was 47-46. He does go to Tulsa.
They do! They do! Yeah, that's fun. But that's the thing, is like I feel like the middle of this, I'm sorry not to cut you off, but like the middle of this conference is really performing well this season. Like you mentioned, Tulsa beat Kansas State. UConn's looked solid in the middle with under Danny Hurley. It's going to be a good conference starting next season, but it's just a little bit of this conference finding their feet under them. But, go ahead.
Yeah, like the conference as a whole, it's definitely trending up. But this year looks so much more like a rebuilding year than it looked like before. Like, obviously losing, almost like all the first team players, a huge thing. But the coaching changes at UConn and Memphis, like those programs are like a year or two away from being like anything. SMU lost like way too much. They're just not good.
Especially, yeah, they just don't have the horses. Like,
especially God. Defensively, they're really bad defense. TCU closed them out pretty well last week. Wichita State is really not good. Like, they'll probably beat somebody. Just because they have a good coach and they play hard. But they just got their doors blown off by Oklahoma. Like Connecticut lost a tough game against Florida State. Like, so it's hard to say if they're a tournament team or not. They've lost to three of the good teams they played while beating Syracuse. But going to UConn will probably be tough.
But, yeah, I mean, UConn looks better. I mean, they're 79th in KenPom. Oh, Memphis is 120th. Oh yeah, they have a coach that can coach and not just convince kids to come play for him. They look a lot better this year. Memphis looks a lot better. Both of those teams are like a year away, which really good for both of those programs. Really good for the conference overall. Because I mean, I don't know about you, but I kind of talked to some folks on Twitter a little bit about it, but. If you get those teams going, this is like a 5-bid league every year, right?
It's definitely got the potential to be to be something like that. Like, where you're at least putting, like, three or four or five teams in every year. Because, like, next year, you got to think if Houston keeps, like, going on their trajectory. Like, I know they lose Corey Davis after this season. But, like, most of their roster is pretty young. So, if, like, Sam keeps it going there, like, you think they should be, like, a perennial tournament team. Like, same with Cincinnati. Like, Memphis and UConn will probably be projected to go there. That maybe SMU, I don't know what they have coming back or what they're going to end up doing. But yeah, probably won't be after this year because, like, their two big stars leave. But that's just four teams, like, on a glance without accounting for Wichita State and Tulsa, who made the tournament a couple years ago.
Well, and, yeah, that's
and
the
whatever
thing, like,
Temple does next year. Go ahead.
Yeah, like, you should be able to pencil in UC Houston, UConn, and Memphis into the tournament any given year. And if one of those teams fall off, Marshall is going to get Wichita State back into the tournament, right? Like, SMU under Tim Jankovic, if he can figure out a way to build them out of this muck, should be able to get them back to a tournament. So it's like, you know, you could probably pencil in four teams and to come in, and then a fifth surprise team, like, if it's a Central Florida, if it is an SMU, if it is a Wichita State, if it's an underperforming, you know, UConn or Memphis or UC or Houston, like, you've got a conference that has solid coaches and is building momentum this season. As long as everything stays the same, this should be a five-bid league, I feel like. Like, I don't understand how it wouldn't be. Like, the only thing holding it back was the fact that UConn and Memphis made dog shit coaching hires and they were dragging down the kind of hole.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. And, like, now most of the league, if not all the league, has, like, pretty solid coaches. Like, you can't really point out one team and be like, oh, that team has a terrible coach and they're not really good. Like, even, like, Tulane, like, they have, like, Dunleavy. They haven't had any success, but then they also got to the NBA. Like, even, like, South Florida has, like, won six games already. East Carolina's won six games.
That's South, like, Florida is 6-2? What is their schedule like?
It's bad enough where South Florida is 6-2.
That's it. That is it. That is it. Yeah. Yeah, Colgate, Stetson, Citadel. Oh, they lost to Citadel. Florida A&M, Georgetown lost to Georgetown, Ohio, App State, and Alabama A&M. Yeah, that will get you six wins. Go ahead.
But, like, just, like, the fact that they're going to win, like, at least 10 games, you would think. Like, same with East Carolina. Like, they've been dragging the league down lately. Like, you can just get those teams to be any type of decent. Like, have a solid league, like, 1 through whatever number it is. Like, 12, 14. How many teams are in basketball?
They're 12. 2, 3, 4. I'm just going to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 12. Oh, yeah, Wichita State made 12. That's why. Yeah. Just ending this podcast with a whimper, okay.
Yeah, like, if you can get the league to be solid up and down, like, when like some of those teams, like the SMU and Temple and, like, Central Florida thrive up there, like, you should definitely have, like, five teams make the tournament. I think that's pretty realistic. Like, assuming Houston, like, stays on their trajectory, which, like, it seems like they probably should. Like, Simpson's done a really good job there.
Yeah, I mean, and they just renovated their arena. I mean, it looks pretty much the same, but apparently it does look like a new arena, sort of. So yeah, the investment's there on the basketball side. The coaching talent is there. I mean, Danny Hurley could very well win Coach of the Year here the next couple of years. I still don't know what Temple's doing. South Florida looks like they're hopefully trying to turn it around. Tulsa's always going to be an issue. East Carolina is just, they're a lost cause. And, you know, who knows what's going on with Tulane. But, you know, at least the conference as a whole is showing that the top two-thirds is as good as it's ever been for us.
And Temple is a really interesting team this year because they have, like, their two big stars, like Rose and Alston. But, like every other Temple team, it seems like they're not really deep. Like, so far this year, they haven't really played that daunting of a schedule. Like, they won at Missouri, but they lost to VCU, and they, lost at Villanova. Like, neither, one of those losses is, a shameful loss. Like, they'll be definitely a team to watch during conference play. Because a couple years ago, we saw, them go through conference play pretty solidly. I guess it was, 2016, where they ended up making the tournament. So, if they can, make a nice run through the league and but compete at the top, a definite tournament team. Well, it seems like you have three right now with UCF, Houston, and UC. Like, adding them as a fourth and, maybe UConn. There's a chance you could get five this year. But then it would require, a really not deep Temple team to win some of these tough road games. And a UConn team, that's still on the upswing to finish hard. But with the way the league is just schedules itself with some of these lulls in the middle, maybe UConn could make a big run and we could have a five bid league this year.
Yeah, I mean that's it, possibly. I don't think it's super likely. You're running out of non-conference wins, and then if UConn's gonna get it, make a run, it's probably gonna be at the expense of, UC or Houston, and cannibalize their chances of making the tournament. But yeah, I mean it is possible. I mean, UConn is 79th, so if they make a good run in the AAC, winning, most of their games. It could be there could be five teams, who knows? I think it's a stretch, but it is there. I'll give you that.
But if UConn goes 14-4 in league play, they'll definitely have a chance. So they only play Houston once.
Yeah.
And if these teams at least at the top go traditionally as they've been, if your league champion goes 16-2, I think that's the chance. But if they go how KenPom has it predicted, where the fourth place team goes 10-8, there's no way.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely. And honestly, that's probably how it's going to probably wind up. But yeah, I mean, there is a possibility UC or UC, the AAC could get four or five in. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think long term, it's like this is leading towards a five bid league, which is, you're never going to get 10 teams like the Big East had when they had 16 in their conference and, it was the heyday of the conference. But if you're getting 5 to 6, basically half of your conference in the NCAA tournament every year, I mean that's excellent. That's what you want. That's exactly what this conference was meant to be doing.
Yeah, 100%.
So, do you have anything else out, or do you want to close this one out?
Outside of it's just celebrating the Xavier game, a really great win. And my pick to thrive was Justin Jennifer, and he had 7 and 9 assists. So we can't let that point go.
Yeah, go ahead and pat yourself on the back there.
Yeah, just a really great win against Xavier. And a really fun game against Mississippi State. It's not stress-free, but it's almost stress-free in that you only have one loss so far. You can afford to take the loss. So this game should just be a fun experience that will probably be very stressful when it's 50-50 with 5 minutes left. But I'm really looking forward to this game. And then they play UCLA. And no matter how good or bad UCLA is, it's UCLA basketball. How can you not be excited?
Yeah, and UCLA is a team that's currently ranked 46th in KenPom. So, maybe you lose to Mississippi State, maybe you win and you beat UCLA too. I mean, we talked about this earlier. You're locked in for the NCAA tournament at that point. Like, there's no way you don't make the NCAA tournament. I mean, if UC has the capability of beating UCLA and Mississippi State and going 5-0 in this last stretch before AAC play, there's no way this team completely collapses in the conference. There's just no way.
But you're really putting the jinx on them, when something bad happens and they
Okay, well,
go 1-17 in conference.
injuries injuries don't count. If an injury happens, it throws it out the window, right?
I'm sure there's, like, one superstitious person who, like, you've just, like, made their day miserable by saying how much of a lock it would it is for them to make the tournament.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm going to come back and crow on that one, I'm sure. But probably not, right?
Yeah.
Good lines?
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Like, all they do is win now. Like, so... And, like, they'll probably never lose again. So let's keep the good times going.
I mean, why wouldn't they win the next infinite amount of national championships? I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on.
Come on.
And more positive. Like,
freak out person. Yeah, seriously. But like, in all seriousness, that... Win or lose this Saturday is not going to have any major bearing on their NCAA tournament hopes. You know, a win basically locks them into an NCAA tournament spot, probably, and a loss just gets them a good loss on the resume. So, enjoy it.
And we'll be back at you next week to preview the bowl game and talk about this big win. So thanks for joining us, and as always, go Bearcats!